In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Let's talk movies. On a Monday afternoon, Alan Adams from The Main Edge joins us. Pass the Popcorn is brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Welcome, Alan.
Hello, how are you?
Wonderful. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well.
We were chatting about your weekend during the break. Of course, Mother's Day.
Yeah.
I saw you hanging out with your mother-in-law.
Yeah, no, we did the it was fun. We actually we did an afternoon a lunch at Evan Roots.
Oh, very nice.
We took Sheridan and I, my in-laws, Gordon and Cynthia, and my mom and my sister.
Oh, very nice.
We all had lunch together. It was really nice.
Good to recognize those moms.
Indeed.
Hardest working people in show business.
I agree 100%.
One day a year is not enough.
That is accurate.
What's going on in your Monday? You're getting caught up, huh?
Yeah. Like when you have a weekend like that, sometimes all the work that you're supposed to do over the weekend kind of falls by the wayside, and then you wake up on Monday morning and you're like, oh right, yeah, no, the world hasn't stopped turning.
Ooh.
I have to do all these things, and so, you know, we got a little frantic today, and you know, I wasn't helped by the fact that it sounded like a full-scale demolition project is happening in the office next door to mine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, I spent 3 hours. It sounded like someone was literally pressing a power saw into the wall behind me. So I could feel the vibration in my feet, and I'm just like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's easy to concentrate and, you know, craft sentences while all this is going
oh,
on.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know, you don't need to pay attention to do stuff like that. So, you know, everyone out there, you know, you can look forward to we'll cross our fingers that everything I wrote down today makes sense.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I have not. Look, even impaired, you're above average and then some.
I appreciate that.
No problem at all. You went to see a couple of movies this weekend and all of that. Once again this week at opposite ends of the spectrum, it would appear.
It's funny, right? I went to see Pokemon Detective Pikachu and The Hustle.
Well, there.
Which would you like to hear about first?
Oh, let's go Pikachu first.
Okay.
Why not?
Well, I'll lead with this. I went into this movie figuring, okay, I'm not going to understand the specifics of this. Like, I have a sort of tangential, like, awareness of what Pokemon is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's like I know some of a couple of the characters' names, and, you know, I know that it's a cartoon show and a card game, and my, you know, I have a niece who's super into it. But beyond that, like the real deep dive mythology stuff, I don't know anything about. And we're talking like decades old at this point. Like,
right.
There's a lot of stuff there. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to understand the specifics. So whatever. What I wasn't necessarily anticipating, however, was the fact that in a general sense, I was going to be able to enjoy myself despite not knowing that information.
Wow.
Because it's like, it feels weird to say it, it's actually kind of a fun movie. Like, I actually had a pretty good time watching it.
When was Pokemon big? Was that 90s?
I think it came along.
The first go around.
Yeah, I think it came along, like it hit, like I think when I was just a little too old. So I'm guessing probably mid-90s is probably about when it arrived on these shores. But yeah, it's been around here for 20 years. It's been around in Japan for much longer than that. I could safely say after sitting through the screening of Pokemon Detective Pikachu, I did in fact not understand a lot of the specifics because I'm watching and, you know, random, like, you know, cartoon character things would appear on the screen and do things or make noises, and the other people in the theater would cheer or laugh or clap, and I'm just like, I don't know what's happening, but okay, let's have some fun.
Sure.
But the joy of it is, even without having all that specificity, it's still a pretty fun, like, family-friendly adventure type story. It was engaging, some pretty good jokes, some pretty good, like, sort of action set pieces, and maybe the among the best blending of CGI elements and live action that I've seen. I think, like, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. Like, this is something that, you know, just because it's not necessarily aimed at me doesn't mean that it's not a, a wildly popular property. And so, and, you know, the box office bore that out. It didn't topple Endgame, but, you know, it made $58 million.
Yeah. And Ryan Reynolds is in this, right?
He is. He is the voice of the titular Detective Pikachu.
Okay. a far cry from Deadpool.
Well, that's the thing. Not really.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like tonally, it's pretty much, he's pretty much doing the same thing, just without the swear words and the sex stuff. It's like a cleaned up PG version. Like the whole, like the goofy sense of humor, the self-awareness, like the snarkiness, like all that stuff is there. It's just, you know, no F-bombs and no, again, really super gross sex stuff. Yeah, the plot's pretty simple. It's there's a young man named Tim who lives in a world where Pokemon and humans have been in a sort of you know, have coexisted for millennia. Like the whole deal is like a human partners up with a Pokemon, and that's their deal, and they're buddies for life and all that stuff. He does not have a Pokemon buddy because his childhood dream was to be a Pokemon trainer, but he set aside those dreams after the unfortunate passing of his mom and the rapidly growing distance between himself and his father, who is a police detective in Rhyme City, it's called. But he gets word that his father has been in an accident and passed away, and so he has to go to Rhyme City to collect his father's effects, and he goes. And goes to his dad's apartment where he encounters the Pikachu, which was his father's partner. But the whole deal is Pokemon can't communicate. They can communicate, but they don't speak English. They just say their name in various ways. But this Pikachu can communicate directly with this kid, Tim. And he is voiced by the aforementioned Ryan Reynolds. No one else can understand him, but they can understand each other. And from there, we find out that, you know, maybe there's a little more to this story than initially meets the eye. And that's when we go and we meet the sort of visionary leader of Rhyme City, played by Bill Nighy, who's delightful.
Wow.
It's basically the two of them, they wind up teaming up with an intrepid young reporter by the name of Lucy, played by Catherine Newton. And they start digging into the story, and it turns out, yeah, it goes deep. It goes real deep. And we're left to watch as they sort of try to sort of solve the various mysteries that surround both the situations that led to his father's apparent demise.
Okay.
It's super fun, and the reality is, and this is probably the highest compliment I can pay to this movie. I was engaged by it. I enjoyed it despite not having all that information. The comparison I kind of leapt to, the analogy, and I think it's a pretty good one. You know, it's not that dissimilar from what you see with stuff like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, it's like there are, you know, decades of mythology that. You know, that if you know it, adds a layer of enjoyment to the experience, but you don't need it to get that the sort of baseline of entertainment. And I feel like this movie was very similar in that way. And a lot of it, you know, springs from the fact that, you know, that Reynolds is, you know, I hate to say it, but he's really good in this. But again, like we said before, it's basically doing Deadpool again, because Deadpool is essentially a voiceover part. In a lot of ways,
because
he's, you know, wearing the mask and all that stuff. But yeah, it's just cleaned up, but the attitude is very similar. And I gotta say, I don't know if you've seen any of the sort of press junket stuff that Bill Nighy has been doing for this movie.
No.
He is a full-on Pokemon convert. Like, he goes on these interviews and just waxes rhapsodic about all this stuff that's Pokemon related. And you're just like, wow, this dude clearly had And you watch the movie and it's like, oh yeah, no, he is having an absolute blast doing this. And so, you know, and that sort of energy is infectious when you're watching someone who, probably considered this more of a paycheck than anything else.
Well, I read an interesting interview with Reynolds too, when he said, you know, that's me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say it, but I guess I am. I was really miscast in some of these romantic comedies because I'm just not comfortable doing that kind of thing. It's not what I'm good at.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's he's a gross weirdo who just happens to have like movie star looks.
Yes,
like that's kind of his deal.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
and makes me like him a little bit more.
Yep. It's rated PG, but that's a light PG. Like I would go so far as to say it's appropriate for all ages. Maybe a little intense, like scary wise, a couple of places for the real little ones. But for the most part, I had a good time, and the people in the theater had a better one.
All right. Well, let's talk about The Hustle. As I understand it, this is kind of a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, there's no kind of about it. It's very much a remake.
Wow, which I loved.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and so I was skeptical, my skepticism was moderately well placed. Like it's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson star in the Michael Caine and Steve Martin roles, respectively. And you know they're both talented and they have a really good chemistry together and all that. But the reality is that like, other than sort of doing the gender flip, like they didn't really bring anything else to the table as far as making this movie. And so it's basically the same, like it's basically the same movie, only, you know, with updated settings and females in the lead. Still funny. Like, the two of them, again, they're very talented. And so, you know, there's a nice high floor for what kind of movie this was going to be. But the reality is, the filmmakers, they didn't really bring any, they just stuck to the tried and true. And I understand the it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of attitude. But when you do it like this, it almost, you almost doom your movie to a feeling of feeling unnecessary, like inessential.
Right.
Like it's not that it's bad. It's just like, it doesn't, like, why bother?
Sure.
In a lot of ways. For those who are unfamiliar, you've got, Rebel Wilson playing Penny, a sort of small-time hustler who basically, you know, tries to catfish men out of a couple hundred bucks at a time, but she's getting tired of that life and wants to make a big score, and so she decides to make her way. She hears that the French Riviera is ripe for the picking for stuff like this, and so she makes her way over there, where she discovers in a small village that's an elite and wealthy playground, Josephine, played by Anne Hathaway, who has carved out quite a wonderful niche for herself of a much higher end con artist, the bigger grift, as it were, you know, with her, you know, her friends in the police department and the assistance of her butler. She goes to the casinos and, you know, hits up these wildly wealthy men and, you know, and steals for them. Well, steals isn't the right word, because the funds are handed over with free will. So it's not necessarily theft. It's just more of a deceptive kind of situation. So anyway, Penny shows up in this town. Josephine wants to get rid of her, but circumstances lead to Penny coming into some information that would be very damaging to Josephine's place in this little town. And so in exchange for not outing her, Penny demands that Josephine teach her the ways of the con artist, and you know, they become a team to con these incredibly wealthy men. And this is basically the best part of the movie, the education montage, because they go right into, I'm sure you remember from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the Ruprecht the Monkey Boy. they give us one of those. Only Rebel Wilson plays Hortense. But it's the same sort of feral kind of inbred royalty, minor royalty kind of situation. Easily the best part of the movie. Some great physical stuff from Rebel Wilson, which juxtaposes nicely with the sort of with Anne Hathaway's almost pathological sort of stiffness. And so you put them together, and that really works well. Eventually, They decide, they get to the, there's only room in this town for, this town ain't big enough for the two of us moment. And so they make a bet. The bet is who can get $500,000 off this goofball tech millionaire who's in town to speak to some French investors, played by Alex Sharp, who is best known as, he won the Tony for A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. So he's a Broadway guy, yep. First and foremost. But yeah, and so it's the two of them are in competition to get money from him. You know, as things progress, they start to discover that, you know, maybe there's a little more to this guy than meets the eye, and they start to question what they're doing and whether they're doing the right thing, et cetera, et cetera. You know how this thing goes. And, you know, in a world built on deception, you never know who you can trust.
All right.
It's fun. Like,
yep.
I probably enjoyed it more than the movie actually warranted. And I did that because, and I mentioned, I went on a little bit about this in the review because this is one of the joys of the movie theater experience. There was a woman sitting probably two rows behind us. Rich, no one has ever had as much fun doing anything as this woman had watching this movie. Like, it was remarkable. And it was one of those things where, like, you, and it wasn't like in an annoying way. It wasn't like just a constant, like, har, like Robert De Niro in Cape Fear kind of thing. Like, it was just like, it was really very genuine, and it like happened at appropriate moments, but it was just like, she was so clearly engaged by what was happening. Like, it was infectious. And so, you know, so Sheridan and I are sitting there, and it's like, you know, that initially it's like, oh, okay, this is fine. This is okay. But by the end, it's like, man, I'm having a great time. Thanks, random lady who's two rows behind us. Because again, I don't know if you've looked at any of the reviews for this movie. They have not been kind.
No,
critics have not been kind to The Hustle. I think it was not nearly as bad as some would have you believe. Not a great movie. You know, they're not certainly not reinventing the wheel. But Hathaway and Wilson have a nice chemistry. They're both pretty well. You know, they're both pretty comedically talented. The supporting cast is very good. A couple of scenes stolen. Dean Norris shows up as one of the suitors who the first suitor to meet Hortense, which is delightful. He's an oil man from Texas. And Maine's own friend of downtown, Timothy Simons, is actually in the very first scene of the movie, and he's a delight as well. I'm not gonna talk about what he does because I think you should be able to enjoy that. Without any sort of preconceived notions, but just know that he crushes it as always.
Fantastic.
Sounds like maybe a movie that somebody has not seen the original Dirty Rotten Scoundrels would enjoy a lot more than somebody that, you know, like I think this room all have a pretty solid opinion on how good that original was.
I think that's a really good point. I think it's one of those movies that, you know, prior knowledge, knowledge of the prior source material isn't necessarily going to benefit you. And
it is a 30-year-old movie, so there is a large audience out there that
if I remember right, that wasn't an original either. That was a remake of a movie from the early 60s.
Yeah, I believe it was called Bedtime Story. It was, It was Marlon Brando and David Niven, which, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is one of those movies. It apparently wrapped production a couple of years ago and got moved around a little bit on the schedule. So you're always hesitant when you see that kind of thing. It's perfectly entertaining. Like, I don't think you necessarily need to go to the movie theater. Although, if you do, hope that woman has come back to see it again.
She's there. Every show.
And if not, you know, if you wind up watching it like on Netflix in 6 months or on an airplane in 2 years, you won't regret it.
There you go. That's the seal of approval from Alan Adams of The Main Edge. Thank you, Alan.
You're very welcome.